Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It's episode 206 here. Man, 206. And Tony, how are things in your world?
Things are pretty good. My brain is starting to go back to normal after studying for the CISSP, which messed me up post-test for at least a week. I was just saying definitions to people in conversation. So that's getting a lot better. And apparently my Skype is in a new beta version.
Oh.
And I didn't choose it. So I've got like a wavy background.
I have.
Got like a wavy background. Do you have the same thing?
I do. It's kind of like pastel, like very nice and relaxing
Skype
colors.
Beta look.
Man.
Yes. Skype. And yeah. So I don't really have any, crazy stuff going on. It's been pretty steady. I did a rearrangement and ergonomic fix up of my workstation at home. So that's made everybody in the home happy.
Yeah.
Because apparently when I was studying for my test, I destroyed my house and didn't pay attention. I had papers everywhere, just books, just like papers and like homemade flashcards everywhere. Just like stacks of handwritten notes. And I was writing, in grids, like in little block letters, like the Unabomber, which is a lot of that. So I've just been literally cleaning up all that and making the common spaces that I had been destroying like normal again.
Nice. That's good. That's always important.
Yeah. My wife was super supportive though. I mean, I knew she was being supportive, but like, man, I like trashed this place. I'm not even joking. I don't even know what I was doing. For days I was finding pages of just papers. So I'm like, if anybody finds this stuff, they're going to think I'm insane. They were in my car. They were just everywhere. Cause I was studying all the time I could find. I was like, okay, I'm going to study this today. So I'd make a little stack of paper and put it here. And like, I'm going to study in the dining room because, my wife wants to use the upstairs. Or I'm going to study upstairs because, like, it's quiet and the kid's napping downstairs. So I just have papers everywhere. And, So anyway, I'm all back to normal. Back to normal.
Nice. I like it. That's good. That is good. Out there in podcast land, my family and I, we got a dog, and we've had a dog now for the first week, and that is a big change. We've never had a dog before. Like Jennifer had dogs growing up, I had a dog growing up, but it's different.
What's the dog's name?
The dog's name is Timmy. So my son, we promised him that when we moved into a house, we would get a dog, and ever since we moved into the house, he's been asking like when. And he's very adamant that the name is Timmy, regardless of the gender. We went to a rescue and saw this dog, and she's great, but her name is Timmy. So that's just how it is. So but no, she's wonderful. She's very sweet. She's very, very, very sweet. And a good family dog, a Catahoula leopard dog. For those out there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to get a photo.
Yeah. I might put a photo up her on the, take a photo and put it on the, she's very pretty. These dogs are bred pretty much exclusively in Louisiana. So I'm not sure how she ended up in Indianapolis, but, she did. So, great. But you know what, Tony, let's get down to brass tacks.
What am I drinking?
What is going on? What's going down your gullet tonight?
Well, I'm just going to get mine out of the way because I'm not drinking beer tonight. I'm drinking Liquid Death sparkling water.
Nice.
It's just really good water.
That's good.
It is in a black can. It does have a gold skull on it, but it's just water.
Nice. I'm drinking Bell's Bright White. ale. It's a
you know, I saw this at Whole Foods, so tell me about it.
This is the first time I've had it. You had a white ale on a couple weeks ago, I think. You were drinking a white ale.
Yeah, I did, but I don't think I had this Bale. I didn't have the Bale's one.
No.
So
white ales, if you pour them into glass, they're cloudy. They're a wheat beer. They're cloudy. These are sweet. They're often served with a citrus. I'm just drinking it right out of the bottle, though, and it's pretty tasty.
And, so you're saying it's good.
It's good. Yes, you can't really go wrong with Bell's. So if you go into your store and you see Bell's, which is a brewery out of Michigan, if you see them on there and you just grab one of their six packs, chances are you're going to be enjoying that beer. So
Patrick, according to their website, you should be eating mussels, ham, sushi, salads, or salted cheeses.
Oh,
this beer.
Yeah. I think all of those things would be very, 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 very tasty. I'm not drinking. I had a sandwich two sandwiches for dinner, two turkey sandwiches. So I guess that kind of counts, but that was like an hour ago. So I don't know. I'm just going to have this one beer and then probably go to bed. So, but yeah, very tasty.
You got a lot of stuff on the agenda tonight related to games, Patrick. A lot of games.
Yeah. So one game, I saw this. There's a blog that I occasionally look at called the Blue Skunk Blog. I don't know if you are familiar with this. But this guy was an international educator. His name is Doug Johnson. He's a librarian and a media specialist. And he's always been very cutting edge. I think he's retired now, and he just does conferences. I don't know if he's actually working anywhere. But he was one of the pioneers of one-to-one internationally. Mm. He out of the American School of Bombay, I think it was. He was there. Yeah, yeah. And he wrote up a big proposal, and he documented everything on. Anyway, it's a good blog. I don't always agree with everything he says, but he definitely has some good takes, and he's a librarian too, which is kind of very interesting.
Is it Johnson or Jansen?
Johnson, Doug Johnson. I'm pretty sure it's Doug Johnson. But it's the Blue Skunk blog, and it's Squarespace, it says so. But anyway, yeah, it's good. Check it out. And he had on there the Oregon Trail, Tony. Do you remember the Oregon Trail? Playing that in school?
Yeah, I never played it.
So in fifth grade, we played it, but it wasn't a computer game. The teacher. You were like flipping coins, and you were rolling dice. You were doing these games of chance to figure out what would happen. And pretty much for people who never heard or don't know what the Oregon Trail is, it's a game where you start off in the Midwest or in the East, and it's 1848, and you're working your way to Oregon for a better life. And
Patrick, should I be a banker? A carpenter or a farmer?
All right,
so I fired it up just for you.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I found the secret to the game.
What's the secret? Can you just go ahead and tell me?
I will.
It'll take me weeks.
So the secret is at the very beginning of the game, you have to buy your supplies, like food. Don't buy much food. Buy very little food. Buy lots of bullets. Bullets are the key. They're the secret key to the game, because you can stop and hunt anytime you want, and you, as long as you have enough bullets, you're almost guaranteed to kill something. Like in the game where you played it with like paper, you would have to like flip a coin or roll a die, and oh, you rolled a three. Well, you got a deer. Well, great, you got like 80 pounds of meat. Oh, you rolled a six. Well, that's nothing. You don't get anything. You know. And you wasted five bullets or something like that. the computer game, it's on archive.org, and you can embed it, which we embedded it in itbabble.com, and you can go and play it. And it's fun. It's kind of interesting. A nice bit of nostalgia from 1990. Archive.org is the best. It's great.
All right. Well, I'm on there now. I'm sucked in.
It is.
I have $800 to buy supplies.
That's right. That's right. I put all my supplies.
Buy whatever you need.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you spend too much money, don't worry. It'll let you go back in and change it. You know, I bet this game was written in BASIC. I'm willing to go out on a limb and just say this thing was written in BASIC back in 1990. So,
all right. What would you like to buy? Ammunition 4.
Yeah, buy a bunch of it because you can you want to buy a little bit of food, but they're like they want you to buy lots of food, but no, you can't do that. Just buy a little bit of food.
Okay, I got it.
There you go. And it does take a little while. It takes a good 20, 30 minutes to do the whole game. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of fun. The Oregon Trail.
Do I need to buy oxen?
Yeah, you have to. Because obviously they pull the wagon. And be sure to rest whenever your people get sick. I think you start off with six or five people. I only have three people survive the journey.
Patrick,
you know,
what are you doing?
I don't know. They just got one person got cholera. I don't know. They got cholera. Another person. What was another person? Another person died of like just a fever. Another person got washed away in a river, which was bad. That was bad.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, but of course, it's very famous for people dying of dysentery. That's what this game is real famous for. You get the dysentery and you're done. You're donezo. Because there's no medicine. It's 1848, right? There's no medicines. No clinics. It's the best. It's a great game. And you can play it for free, which is awesome.
Yeah. All right. Did I not buy enough ammunition? Come on.
Yeah, and you have few...
I may not be able to finish the podcast because I've got to play this game.
I wouldn't doubt you. I wouldn't blame you at all.
I'm buying a. How many boxes do you want?
No, buy a bunch. Just buy a bunch. Because there's that's a game of skill, like with the hunting. There's not a whole lot of randomness to it.
All right, just bought 90 boxes.
Man, you're gonna be good, and you can just keep hunting and hunting and hunting and hunting. And obviously, it takes time when you hunt. But you know, if somebody's sick or injured. You know, that gives them time to heal. So, but yeah, you can just hunt and hunt and hunt. That's the key. That's the key, folks. That's the key. And that way you can have loads and loads and loads of food. And that way you can just keep them eating like kings the whole way. But
that's a good plan, Patrick.
Yeah. Thanks. And the other video game is, Poppy Playtime.
Okay, so I looked this up.
Yeah.
Right, so Oregon Trail is just entertainment. Everybody can go play for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Archive.org. Yep.
So Patrick put something in, the Huggy Wuggy, but you brought up the Slender Man hysteria in 2014.
Yes.
So first, I think you should recap that, and then I will give you my opinion on this Huggy Wuggy, because I actually fired up YouTube and watched some of the game.
Okay, all right, great, great. Okay, so in 2014, there was a game... They turned it into a game. I think it was more of like an urban myth where there's this faceless, very tall, thin, slender person. And they would show up and kill you in the woods or something. You know. Anyway, and so they made a game about it. And anytime Slender Man got near, like your vision got all shaky. And it's, you know, it's a horror game. It's meant to scare you. And you have to find these puzzles. You have to solve these puzzles to get away from the Enderman and escape. And in 2014, two girls... led their friend out into the forest, two middle school age girls, and then they proceeded to stab her to death. Well, she didn't. I don't think she died right away. I don't know if she did die. I think she actually lived. But anyway, the girl's defense was, Slender Man told us to do this. Slender Man. And so there became all this hysteria. Don't let your kids play Slender Man. They'll get brainwashed. It causes people to kill people. And so many times video games, people will hang problems on the video games. And every time it can't be proved. It's like not even close to proved. There's no evidence at all.
Right.
And there's been study after study after study since the 80s about video games and violence, and is there a link? And the answer is no. There is no definitive link. Like, if you play Call of Duty, you're not going to go out and get a gun and shoot up people. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
And so this game, Hubby Wubby, it's another horror game. You're in a toy factory, and the Hubby Wubby, I think, is the toy, and this toy is aware of itself, and it eats people for whatever reason. Who cares? It doesn't matter. And you have to solve puzzles to get out. And it's only chapter one, so it's a fairly short game, and I think it's only $5 for the PC. I don't think it's on the Xbox or PlayStation or anything. Whoa!
All right. But I'm gonna stop because I'm getting sucked in.
It's good. Anyway, Poppy Playtime. Okay. And parent.com, which is a big parenting website, they wrote a warning piece, and the warning was it might scare your kids, so they shouldn't play it. It's a horror game. It's meant to scare people. Like that's the point of it. And there are clips of this game everywhere on YouTube. Like it is kind of it's a hot game right now. And so Tony, you said you watched some gameplay. Yes. What are your thoughts on Poppy Playtime?
It looks like The Shining, so that is like a red flag for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's a scary movie.
The rooms the thing goes through to like solve puzzles look like The Shining.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to leave it there. I think that part would definitely scare a lot of kids.
Yeah.
I think the environment is definitely designed. It's like it was almost designed for an older group, and they were like, hey, wait a second. The story is really not coming together. Why don't we just go with something easier, but keep the same backgrounds and the same room design? So, yeah, it looks like The Shining, and it is a little freaky. Kind of looks like an acid trip. So
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Like, I feel like it is a little scary looking. I think it is a little scary looking.
Yeah, and it's meant to be. But if you're a parent out there or a teacher and kids are talking about it at school or whatever, just go to YouTube and you can watch somebody start the game and finish the game in a 30-minute video. And you usually within the first 5 or 10 minutes, you don't even see the monster toy until halfway through the game. Like you're just solving puzzles for the first half of the game. And you don't
rooms that look like The Shining.
Yes, in rooms that look like The Shining. And there's blood on the wall, but you never see a body or anything.
Are you trying to say nobody, no crime, Patrick? Is that your argument here? Nobody, no crime.
If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. I'm just saying, as if you're a parent out there, do a little bit of research because it won't take you very long, and figure out if the game is appropriate for your children or not. I mean, that's it. Don't read on parent.com. Oh my God, they said it's scary. Well then, I guess we can't. Shut it down.
That's what I did, right? Yeah. I decided to. I'm like, I'm just gonna look it up and see what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. And you have a pretty young.
That's really all you can do.
Yeah, you have a pretty young son, and I have a young daughter. Like I wouldn't let her play that game. But my other son, maybe. And really, the game is fairly short, and there's only, you're just solving puzzles. That's it. So after there's this, the first time you run into the monster Hubby Wubby, you have to solve this puzzle to get away from him. And so the there's no way you can know because it's like a maze. So you don't know which way to turn. So he kills you a whole bunch of times. After about the third or fourth time, you're like, okay, I can't go left. I have to go right. All right, got it. Okay. And you just get a little numb to it. You're just like, okay, got it. So, but anyway.
All right.
Yeah, there it is. I just, yep. I just, you know,
I think a lot of people, maybe in our age group, don't realize. So I'm like in my 40s. So yep. There you go. I think a lot of people don't realize you can go to YouTube and actually watch people play video games. Yeah. Just type the name of the game in. It's a complete like type of entertainment genre now.
It is.
Watching people play video games.
Yeah.
So you can watch someone, like Patrick said, play the entire game and mm-hmm. you can see what it looks like.
Yeah. And they're very, some of these people are very entertaining. Some of them are they drop curse words. Some of them don't drop any curse words. There's a gamer out there on YouTube. His channel is Zebra Gamer. And he plays a lot of Nintendo games and he doesn't curse at all. Like he doesn't even say the word crap. He's just like, gosh, man. Ah, geez, I didn't make that jump. Well, I guess I'm going to have to try it again. And he's very positive and uplifting, and he plays these Mega Man games and Mario games and stuff. He's super, super crazy popular. People love watching his stuff.
They love him.
They do. I wonder how many, hold on here. Let me see. I'm going to try to find him on YouTube real quick. Zebra Gamer YouTube. Let's see here.
Hello, Zebra Herd. Welcome to Super Mario 3D World.
There you go. I'm not going to play too much because I don't want to. Yeah, he has, let's see, that video you just heard had 1.4 million views. And he has 355,000 subscribers. And I'm not one of them. But
so this guy's legit.
He is. He's made, I would say, well over 1,000 videos.
So check out the games and you don't have to buy them. Just watch a YouTube of the game and then decide.
Yeah. Don't just read an article and then shut it down, because, especially from Common Sense Media, they're the worst. They're just the worst. their reviews are usually three sentences long. They're just awful. And then you have comments and the comments are, oh, my kid played it and thought it was pretty fun. And then another one is like, my kid played it and couldn't and wet his bed for the next 3 years. It's just super blown out of proportion. Extreme, yeah. Yeah. So do your own research. That's it. That's the whole point. That's a lot of speaking. Yeah. And the Oregon Trail is definitely thumbs up for everybody. Yeah. It's not too scary at all. Super, super fun, isn't it, Tony? Super fun.
I'm not playing it. I stopped it because I knew I would just get sucked in. But I am going to try to play it this week. And yeah. I've done the math, so I know how many bullets I'm going to buy.
There you go. Nice. Yep. That's the key. That's the key. Rest. Buy lots of bullets so you can hunt and keep your people fed. And you'll be good. All right, Tony, we've got two more topics here. You have some fun facts for us.
Yeah, password fun facts. Okay, are you ready? So,
please.
This is all from my CISSP exam. Here you go. First off, Patrick, how many times in your life have you heard, we need to change our passwords at least once a year?
I think every school I've worked at has had
best practice in the government and military and every place that protects data is not to change passwords unless you know they have been compromised.
Oh, that's really good. Okay.
Yep. There's a lot of reasons for it. It actually makes a lot of sense. If a person has a secure password that they don't forget, they will not write it down and leave it everywhere. And they also are not going to get into a situation where they lock themselves out. And when people lock themselves out and have to make phone calls to unlock things, that's when they're susceptible to social engineering attacks, which is just a fancy way of saying being scammed by another person.
I had no idea.
Changing passwords on a regular basis is not a policy that is recommended.
That makes sense. It's been a while, but I have seen the person with a sticky note on the monitor.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's their password for some service or something like that. I've seen that many times.
I'm moving away from that. Now, the other fun fact for passwords is how hard should the password be or how big should it be? In my course, the professor dude, he had like a simulator to crack passwords.
Yeah.
So it couldn't crack every password immediately, but it could tell the person about how long it would take. So he had a password that was like 6 characters long, and his software said, you know, I can break this password in like 2 hours.
Okay.
Then he went up to 8 characters, and it went out to about a week, and he went up to 15 characters, and it went out to a few years.
Oh, wow.
So now where's the sweet spot? So I think here's the sweet spot. I think it's 8 to 10 characters, capital letter, at least one number and one special character. 10 characters really gets it done. If you're going to add a capital letter, a special character, and a number, the chances anyone is going to start like trying to brute force attack a school are pretty limited anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would say 8 to 10 characters, capital letter, number, special character, and multi-factor authentication for people who need it. So I'm working on a policy right now. And when I say I'm working on it, what I do is I imagine implementing it and all the people yell at me. And then I try to figure out what my best argument is to tell them that this is a good idea. Yep. So that's not really a joke. It's like I simulate it in my mind. Like, hey, John, we're going to switch to multi-factor. So every time you log into your computer, you're going to need your phone. And that's then right. You just imagine John screaming at you. So, but then you're like, okay, what's John's job? Well, John is a teacher, and he has access to 0 financial information, 0 personal like identifying information for students, except for stuff that's in the directory, which all the parents have access to.
Yeah.
So then you're like, can I tell the parents they can't have access to the directory? It's like, no. I can't do that because they'll lose their minds.
They will.
So do I need John to use MFA? It's like, no, I don't. But let's talk about Steve. Steve works in accounting. Mm. Different situation.
Yeah.
Steve has access to financial information. He has access to the database. Steve, I'm sorry, but you're not like John. You're going to have more security.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm working on in my head right now. I'm trying to work out like a reasonable policy for that. But I just, the password thing, I know so many people that change their passwords. Like they're like, hey, we're changing our passwords twice a year. Everyone hates it. And here's the thing. Yeah. Everyone hates it. And it statistically is not making a difference. So let's just not do it.
I remember reading a Lifehacker article, and they're like, hey, New Year's resolution, what should you do tech wise New Year's? And they're like, change all your passwords. And I was like, oh, okay. And I remember doing this, sitting down one afternoon and just going through, oh, with my bank, let's change the password. Oh, here's my
now,
email.
Somebody
change
has the a password. Breach. Okay. If you suspect a breach, you have to do it. Okay. But if not, like, you don't do it just for fun.
No. I was just doing it because they're like, hey, this is a good policy. And I was like, okay. Tony, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I use a password manager, one password. And there's others out there, Gazelle, LastPass, I think, and there's a couple more I can't think of. And they can generate a password and store it for you, and they can log in for you. And one password is encrypted on the device. So it's it's on my computer. Is there a way to get around that encryption? Yes, there is. But you have to, I guess, interrupt the BIOS, like the boot up sequence. And then you have to have access to the machine itself to do that. But what does CISSP say about password managers, like LastPass
and 1Password? Okay, so password managers, if they're implemented properly, are fine. But what you're talking about is letting the password manager generate your password.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the only problem I can see with that. When that software generates passwords, it is using some type of algorithm. We're not going to go into how it does it, but it's using some kind of algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That algorithm is proprietary to the company, and you hope that that company has protected that algorithm. If someone were to get access to that algorithm, they theoretically could unlock every one password vault on the planet. Or a percentage of them. Okay. So you're like, you know, one password's going to say no, it's individual for everybody. What usually this is how this goes. Your password generation is original to you. It's generated by some type of algorithm. That algorithm is probably made by another algorithm. That algorithm is made by another one, and it goes back to some type of central algorithm generation system that should not even be on the internet. Okay, so this initial piece of math somewhere on a computer that should not be on the internet generates everything, and then that creates the security for everybody else. So theoretically, you would have to have access to something that is not on the internet. But this is what happens. And this is actually what happened to Verkada camera systems last year. And it made me really mad because I wanted to buy some. And as soon as this happened, it shut down the purchasing.
Oh, okay, so I read a different story that it was a...
That's not what happened. I don't mean their password. I want to tell you what happened.
Okay, yes.
So what we're talking about is we're talking about a company that is using some tools to centrally manage their customers.
Yes, in the cloud.
And those tools are all secure unless somebody who uses the tools every day decides this is too much work. I'm going to put a backdoor in so that I can do my work faster. And with Verkada, somebody put a backdoor into their maintenance system, which allows them to access cameras and maintain them and update them and push firmware to them and troubleshoot them. Yep. All their cameras in the world. And they were able to, they basically didn't like the fact that I'm sure Verkada had two or maybe even three levels of authentication. So I'm certain that the way their maintenance system worked was, you had access to it, you had to log in, and you had to put in your identity information and your two-factor. And then I will even bet that they had certain equipment that was licensed to do it. So you had to be on the right equipment with the right ID and the right multi-factor to even get into it. I guarantee you it was like that, if not worse, like tougher. And someone didn't like all the hoops because they were probably working remotely. And their remote computer probably had to remote into this secure system, and it was even more annoying. And so my theory is that they made that easy so they could work remotely, and then they left a big, huge hole in the system, and it was exploited. And the reason it was exploited is because Verkada used a central system to generate their security for all their cameras. It's just how they did it. And if 1Password or any of these other companies, they're not going to tell you how they make these logins. But you can bet that they're using mathematics, and you can bet that there is a central algorithm somewhere that starts the process. So the theory is if somebody gets a hold of that, they can compromise the whole system. However, Patrick, you could generate your own passwords and lock them in 1Password and apply them from 1Password. Mm-hmm. And then it wouldn't matter if somebody gets 1Password system because they wouldn't have your passwords.
Oh, okay.
Because you'd be making them on your own, and all 1Password is doing is helping you pass your password to the service. Mm-hmm. So that kind of encryption, you know, is local to your machine, and it's not. It's probably one way. There's probably no way to decrypt it. You probably have to have your password gets encrypted with your private key on your 1Password, and that goes into your browser to like authenticate you. So it doesn't make you part of the kind of central piece. So if somebody were to hack the central algorithm or whatever, it wouldn't impact you. That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just spitballing though. But I'm not saying, okay, the likelihood of that happening, again, not very likely, and you being impacted, very unlikely.
Yeah.
And yeah. I really like 1Password, and I use it too.
Yeah, it's really good. I hate that they went to a subscription model, but it's still very good. It's still very, very, very good.
And my last topic before we go too long, the streaming party is over, folks.
Yeah,
what's going on? So I'm getting a lot of heat.
Bringing the heat.
I'm not really getting heat. People just have been noticing things, and I'm not one of these people who are like, oh, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. As soon as somebody reports something weird, I go check it out. Okay, so if you want to know when you're getting ready to have a security incident, it usually starts with something weird, and that weird thing is ignored because people are like, oh, you know, that teacher always has the same problem. And I'm like, yeah, but this is kind of strange. Like, we should check it out. So anyway, let me get to it. So I was going to connect a quick story, just a quick story. When I was in college and I first got a hold of Adobe products, I'm like, all right, I want to learn how to use these and I want it to be fun. So I'm going to make a fake ID. So I did make a fake ID with Adobe products when I was in college.
Oh,
but guess what, Patrick?
I didn't
actually use the fake ID and I didn't make fake IDs for other people.
Oh, there you go.
I didn't even really print it. All I did was design a fake ID to see if it looked like a real ID. Do you know what would have happened if I started using my skills and making fake IDs and selling them?
You probably would have been caught.
That's right. Eventually, the party's over, people. You can use your technology to do all kinds of cool stuff. Like, for example, maybe you figured out that you could play Netflix and use Microsoft Teams and rebroadcast it to a bunch of students. And maybe you did that for the last 2 years.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
Maybe Netflix has figured that out. Maybe Amazon figured that out. Maybe Apple Movies has figured that out too. So what is happening is all of these services used to have what I would call a fairly light implementation to block you from rebroadcasting. Excuse me. To block you from rebroadcasting. So they don't want you to play a movie in your classroom on Netflix for your entire class. They don't want you to do that. You're not supposed to do that. You could argue fair use, but who are you going to argue with?
That's right.
It's not like you're going to the library to check something out. Unless the content on the service says that you're allowed to use it in the classroom, they don't want you to do it. So before, it was really, like I said, it was a light implementation. If you're playing Amazon or Netflix in your classroom and you were connected via HDMI cable or AirPlay to a projector or a smart TV, as long as you didn't go full screen, it never even really noticed. Like, you could basically stretch your screen and play it and it wouldn't even kick in. If you did go full screen, occasionally it would say, hey, Patrick, you're not supposed to do this. And it would let the audio play, but it would make the screen go black. And it was kind of the same with like Teams and some other like Zoom. There are these tricks that let you like not just share your screen, but like take the audio. You could share your screen and then take the audio from it and push it through to the people listening. So you could say, hey, I don't want my audio to be my microphone. I want it to be the Netflix output.
Yeah.
So people basically could watch Netflix from your computer, right? So it's like restreaming, rebroadcasting. You're not supposed to do it. Recently, they have turned up the heat, man. They can pick up everything. So we had somebody plan something, and this person had done all of their practice. They set everything up, and they tested it multiple times. And then in the middle of a presentation, the screen just went black, and then I went down and started checking in, and I'm like, you know, I think they're not letting you show this. And I tested it on everything, Patrick. I even switched over to a VGA output and it still picked it up.
Whoa. Wow.
So I don't even know how that works. Okay. Like, I actually was like, oh, I've got a VGA adapter. I can beat this thing. Cause I'm like, we'll use VGA and we'll use like analog speakers, right? Just plug it in, headphone jack out.
Yeah.
Got it still knew we were connected to a device. So this is next level, because before they could only detect like HDMI and AirPlay, which are sending information between your computer and the projector and your computer and the TV. the TV and the projector are actually talking to your equipment. So that's, they're like, hey, you know, they can detect that protocol. So they're like, hey, this is, it's communication going on between a broadcast device. Let's shut this down. But now it's getting a lot worse. And so I noticed in international school groups that people are talking about this issue. It's not just me having this problem or people I'm working with. So there are some new services, and we're getting ready to test one out. I'm going to paste it in. I just want to get the name right.
All right. Yeah.
You might already be using it. I'm not sure. But this one is actually pretty affordable. It was a flat rate for the year, and they focus on movies and documentaries. It's called Canopy with a K.
Oh, I've heard of them. Yeah.
And there's a couple more. I'm not going to recommend anything until I test it out. This place got back to me, so we're going to be trying it out. But you can play. It's got apps. You know, you can put it on Apple TV as an app. And you can. They have an educational plan. So they actually have a school plan. It's not like you need to get a Netflix account and try to share it or something, which is a bad idea. So they have a K-12 education license. So we're going to test it out. If it's good, we're going to buy this one and one other one. We're going to try for one other one next year. And I'm hoping, like, I know it's just like, it may be an uphill battle though, because it's, the catalog is not as big. And that's always difficult, you know, if you have something that you want to watch. But I don't really have another solution. Like I said, there's no one to contact and say, hey, can't we watch this under fair use?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Who do you call?
Yeah. It's impossible. And the other thing I've kind of noticed is some people are getting around it by using their personal accounts on devices. And right now we have like our Apple TVs locked down. You can't install apps and stuff, but
yeah,
I have noticed kind of a trend of people wanting to share accounts with one another. I just really would like to reinforce that if you're working in education and you're working in front of children, if you're using your own account for a service that you use every day, fine. If you use someone else's account, you have no idea what they were watching the night before.
Yeah, that's right.
You have no idea. And you could log in as them and something horrendous could come up on the screen. And it's going to be most likely attributed to you, not to that person. And it's very hard to revert, you know, the first impression somebody gets from seeing something.
Yeah,
that's all I'm really going to say. And I think it's risky. I think it's really, really risky. So I don't want people taking those chances to try to make this stuff work. So I'm gonna be looking into this stuff, and I'm watching my school groups to see, you know, I want some people to try some other services. I don't want to pay for like five services and only one of them be good. So we're gonna try this one out because they've been good. They got back to us, said we could do a trial, and their annual rate was pretty reasonable. So
yeah, I'm looking through because you can browse through their movies here, and I mean it's not like Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, but it's They've got some really good stuff here, you know.
I thought they did too, and it's one of these things where like, okay, I understand, but this is what, you know, it's like the conversation with the multi-factor. Here's the situation. Mm-hmm. We can guarantee that these movies will work. We cannot guarantee the other movies will work.
Wow, yeah, they got some good stuff. Like they have the HBO show The Inventor about Theranos, like that just came out like a couple months ago.
Yeah, no, I thought they had a good catalog, and I think they rotate it and they try to keep it fresh. So I'm just recommending people start looking into stuff. I remember back in the day, like everybody was all about Discovery United streaming. I haven't looked at that in a while. I don't know if it's any good, but I think we might, you know, the pandemic kind of loosened up a lot of these rules. A lot of these companies, they just said, you know what, we're not going to enforce anything. But I think it's gone beyond what they're willing to tolerate.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We use Zoom at our school, and a teacher asked, you know, she says, "Hey, I want to show them this movie. can I play it on my computer and then share my screen to my students? And we were like, no, that is copyright. That's a bad thing. Like, Zoom would have every right to shut down our account, not give us our money back.
That's right.
At the drop of a hat, and there would be nothing we could do about it.
The most likely outcome would be they would shut everything down. You would have to send them a letter, and literally send them a letter. Like, a lot of people think, oh, I can just you're not going to be able to email it. You're going to have to send them a letter or fax them something, probably from your attorney's office, and they'll probably turn it back on, but they're going to want to know that you understand it's severe and you're not going to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm kind of concerned too, because like most schools coming out of a single campus have one public IP address that connects them to the internet.
That's right.
And these companies, I'm just concerned, like, what if they detect so much traffic coming from like a company or a campus, like, and they're like, why is this school running on all these, you know, Netflix sessions? Could they not, if they wanted to, just block your ability for your entire campus to access Netflix? I mean, I don't know if they would do that, but I think they could.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely could. And Netflix has always been threatening. They're like, oh, we're going to crack down on people sharing passwords. We're going to crack down on people using VPNs. I don't know how many measures they've actually taken, but these are things that they definitely could do. I can't imagine any government in the world would work against them in trying to do this. It's so, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Canopy, so anyway, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we just need to start planning. Like, okay, it's getting worse. It's not every day. And it is frustrating because as a teacher, you could show the same movie, because I've seen this happen too. They show, there's like, let's say they have three classes. First two classes, they show the movie, no problem. Third class, black. Screen's black. So there's not any way for your local like IT support to fix that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing there's nothing you can do.
once it's detected, it's done.
Yeah,
like it's done.
And I know with our network, we ban VPNs. We don't allow VPNs to function on our network. That's something we can say don't allow this type of traffic. So if somebody was thinking of using VPN, chances are your school or organization has already thought of that and shut that down.
I think the point here is that you're working out of school, you want to be able to stay legal and figure out a way. The goal should be, okay, we don't want to try to beat the rules. We want to try to figure out how to operate within the system and have reliable content.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I guess we're all just going to be buying DVDs again. But do they even make DVDs anymore, Patrick?
They do. They do. Okay, people like to collect them. So
I actually had an awesome idea for creating movies that you can check out and make the thing, the medium looks like an old school Blockbuster cartridge. Have I told you this idea?
No, I'm liking it though.
So the video, the content is actually on a chip. It's not, it's kind of like on an SD card.
Yeah.
And it's not like a DVD or something. It's on like an encrypted SD card. And you can either plug it into your device with like USB, or it has its own low power like Wi-Fi, so it can create a peer-to-peer network and stream it to your device. But it looks like a Blockbuster cartridge, like case. It even has that smell, you know, that Mylar smell.
Yeah.
And because it's got the medium in it and a little battery to keep it all working, so it needs to be a little bit bigger. And I just think that would be amazing. And, you know, Maybe it's time for Redbox to step up and get some new technology and start dropping these red boxes with this idea on campuses.
Let's do it. I like it.
Let's do it. Or we can ask Apple to start putting DVD drives back in laptops.
Oh, no. Their DVD drives are terrible. They were awful. Of all the DVD drives ever used on a laptop,
we could probably spend an hour talking about all the ways you had to figure out how to get a stuck DVD out. Because it would suck it in. There's no ejection.
This is back in
the mouse when you boot it up.
This is back in Kuwait. Somebody gave this guy a DVD, and it wasn't a full size DVD. It was like a small one.
Yes.
And the Apple ones, there was no tray that slid out. So a lot of other ones had a tray would slide out, like on a DVD player, and there was a small groove that would fit this type of DVD, the size of DVD, and you push it in there and you can watch it. Well, Apple doesn't have it. They had one that would suck in the DVD and it would push it out. That was part of their problem. Their DVD player was designed so badly, so poorly. And so he stuck this little thing in there and he just pushed it in. Like it never tried to take it. He just put it. So it was rattling in there. He brought it to us and we could hear it rattle. And he goes, I tried to use a paperclip to get it out and I lost a paperclip in there too. I mean, he felt real like bad. This guy,
it was like the Starlight Pit of technology. The thing would just suck in anything, and you could never get it out.
Oh.
I had somebody go to a conference once, and some vendor thought it would be an awesome idea to take DVDs and have them cut so they were like, it was like a weird shape. It was like a lightning bolt or something. Okay. It was like, and again, on a Windows machine where it would pop out, you could put it in there and it would play.
Yeah.
And it was just a weird shape and they just jammed it in their Apple.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah. There's just like, I think for that, the whole bottom had to come off. Like we couldn't get it out at all.
Yeah. And the Apple made an external one called the Super Drive. There was nothing super about that drive. That thing was it was incredibly overpriced. I think it was like
it was really expensive.
It was like $200, yeah. And you could buy like an external one at the time for like $75. And now they're $20. You can for $20 on Amazon. But oh gosh, that thing stinks. It was so over engineered, and it was bad. The whole thing was just bad. Apple, it's one thing. They make a lot of really good stuff, but not their DVD drives. Their DVD drives were garbage. Yeah. Just garbage.
Yeah, they're good coasters.
Yeah. There you go. But yeah, anyway, that's all I got too. So for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there. And you can find our articles, our posts at www.itbabble.com.